Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, the podcast that delves into the human experience of facing life's challenges and emerging from them stronger and wiser. I'm your host, Jane Marchiandi, and today we have an extraordinary guest. Joining us is Rebecca Mason, a gifted rock band musician who will share her personal journey, complete with its own meltdowns, struggles with anxiety and bouts of depression. Rebecca's story is a testament to resiliency as she demonstrates that serenity can be found amidst the storms of life. Through her music, she has become a beacon of hope, sharing her experiences and offering insights on finding peace and making sense of it all. In this episode, Rebecca will guide us through her transformative process, shedding light on the power of living in the moment and nurturing a profound connection to the things we love. So tune into Meltdown to Mastery as we explore the beautiful harmony of life, even in its most challenging moments, with the incredible Rebecca Mason. Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, your story is wonderful because it's all about that search inside when we're feeling anxiety and depression. And you went ahead and created songs and an album, which is really inspiring. But can you talk about your journey and how you had to find that place inside in order to progress with life?
Yeah. So I guess basically just when I became pregnant with my second child, I didn't know really where I was going with, I guess, with life.
Yeah, Rebecca, did you have a meltdown then?
Yeah, I guess you could say that's what it was. I didn't know how to, getting out of bed was hard. I mean, it's like, you know, the usual. I find that my mental health comes in all different types of ugly forms. And one of them is just, yeah, the sads where you just can't move. You know, it's the fear of moving, because if I do move, then, you know, I get anxiety and panic attacks and life is just really difficult. And I've just been lucky enough to love an art form. And I think, yeah, when you get that sad and that dark, I think finding art, whether you're creating it or looking at it, is, you know, that's kind of the way through the tunnel. So yeah, I had a friend who basically really motivated and inspired me to just keep creating and keep writing and keep pushing forward. And that gave me another, like, a distraction and something to think about. And also, again, lucky enough for me, something to keep me writing and recording. So yeah, I had some songs already written, but I used some of the material that I had, you know, had written sort of from beforehand as well. And so Rain's Too Loud for TV came together.
So, you know, we often, all of us, go into that time when we just feel like you say, there's this sadness and this weight that exists inside. And for you, what pulled you there? Like, is it just a feeling of not knowing where to go next, or not having that soul purpose, or not knowing what life's all about? What was it for you?
I don't think in those moments we always really know. And I don't think I knew at the time either. I think just massive confusion and overwhelming feeling. I think if we really understood it, you know, we'd be a lot farther along than we are now. I was just listening to Matthew Perry talk actually this morning on CBC, and obviously in an interview before he passed away, and, you know, just talking about how confusing those moments can be and how you use art to kind of get through them. And there isn't always an understanding. It's just heavy and it's confusing. And I think all those moments beforehand, like the moments of maybe it's trauma from the past, maybe it's, you know, fear of the future, maybe it's just heaviness and unable to kind of get up and out of bed for no other reason other than the fact that all these feelings have just been like bombarding you for weeks and weeks. And then all of a sudden you just stop.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't always, and I think that's what, you know, there's not really much clarity there. And so I don't even know if I could say fully, you know, what brought me down specifically in that time. I think it was just a combination of the anxieties and the fears from day to day. I don't know. I feel like I'm not being very eloquent, but I think that I'm still confused as to why, you know, certain people go there and certain people don't. And I think for whatever reason, it was just, I'd hit my limit and cave in until I could see little flowers growing every once in a while. And then you kind of grab onto it, so you've got a garden.
I think it is very unconscious, you know, the reasons why we go into these periods of time, but to even realize that it could be, you know, anxiety from childhood or anxiety just surfacing, you know, and then that energy, that fear energy is confusing. Mm-hmm. In nature, right? So it keeps us confused. But thank you for sharing that. That's really beautiful. And then, so you found by writing music that it helped pull you out. And then just share that. And then what kind of message to write? You have to listen to that inner voice, right? It just kind of comes out. And then what was the message that came out?
Yeah, I think, you know, in those moments, like it's a thing that happens, I think, as artists and writers and creators, where it starts coming out of us like vomit, and it's not always very well understood, or there isn't really like a path at the beginning anyways. And so I think it was just a lot of like, what's going on? And then it was just this one moment actually where my mother-in-law just came in the door picking up the kids, and she had just been out on her getaway with my father-in-law, and she was just talking about her trying to watch a movie watching TV, and she said they couldn't even hear the movie because the rain outside was too loud. And I guess it felt to me like a metaphor for, you know, the TV is this depressive mood where you've stopped paying attention to the rain or the flowers or the good or the bad or whatever. And I just thought that was a really beautiful thing, or really beautiful metaphor, to sort of be able to grab onto the rain, even if it hurts, and keep moving. And, you know, whether it's the rain or, you know, small moments in life, like I talk about what your lover takes off at the end of the day, and just thinking, you know, how beautiful that is that you get to know that and nobody else does. And, you know, it can be, you know, little thing like the smile on your little boy's face, or the smell of wine when you pour it into a pool of butter and onion, and the smell of it just like coming up to your nose. And all those little moments are those little flowers that I start to see blooming. And that's what kind of pulls me out of the fear and the darkness, and just kind of not just pushes me to move on, but makes me really, really want to. I get really excited I really start to enjoy life again. And that's what keeps me moving at a normal, relatively normal pace now.
Right. Because we've become kind of programmed to not pay attention to nature and the little things, but it's almost the opposite, isn't it? That's where the source of what this muse or you're talking about comes from, the beauty and the what fills us up actually comes from those simple things.
Yeah, I think life is so much more, I wish I could describe it, and maybe one day I'll be able to in some kind of song when there's like music playing and drums and and a beautiful piano part and the right lyrics and the right tones and all that kind of stuff. But even with all that, it's really hard to explain. So I know I'm not going to get there with just me talking about it. But I just think that there is a depth to life that you can only get if you grab onto the small moments and those small things that really grab your attention. That's the only way. I mean, you can make your money and you can have your family and you can get your house and you can go on a trip and, you know, pack your bags and off you go, you know, whatever it is. But unless you have, you know, you pick up your favorite pants and they're made of, right now I'm wearing velvet pants and they're really soft, and you pick those up and you're like, oh wow, these are going to feel great when I put those on. And fold them up in a nice pile and you put them in your suitcase. And then, you know, all of a sudden your head is distracted by the sound of Erik Satie playing on your stereo. And that gives you this feeling of warmth and joy. And moment to moment, you can't always be doing that. And sometimes those moments are actually really heartbreaking and hard to kind of stay with. But I think that is where life's depth and true enjoyment is.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. It's interesting, the scene that you painted with your aunt. Was it your aunt that was listening to the TV?
My mother-in-law, yeah.
Your mother-in-law. That drones us out, doesn't it? Just zoning out, really, to TV, and then you don't notice all these things around you.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Yeah, and I think people sometimes think that I was, you know, standing up against the screen, which, sure, fine if you want to take it like that, but it's really more of a metaphor for being less, because I mean, art is on the screen as well, but to try to take the tangible thing that's real, that's really, you know, that you really could be more interested in, or really is going to fill you up more than whatever it is you're watching.
Yeah. So this is one of the songs that you wrote about?
Yeah, so that's the name of the album. Rings Too Loud for TV is the name of the album, and one of the songs on it. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Tell us a little bit more about the album and what other things came out while you were writing it that really helped you.
The ability to focus on love, I think, I guess to put it simply, it's funny because I've released two songs since then and a documentary, and I'm working on a few new tracks now too. So sometimes it's hard to like look back and see like, oh, what was going on back then? Because really, it took 2 years to record, and that was a couple years ago now. So, but yeah, it's all, you know, everything I've created since then really kind of started at that point. But a big thing that I discovered through the process of Rains Too Loud and the documentary that we made after, yeah, not just focusing on those little moments, but focusing on those you love and what you love. And really discovering that, I think people who have gone through trauma and gone through, I had an earlier breakdown, more like 12 years ago, that was much worse than the one I went through for Rains Too Loud. You know, that's where focusing on the things and the people that you love is really what got me through. I know that sounds simple, but it was I had to put myself through very conscious moments of, do you love, what do you love? Like, do you love this person? Do you enjoy their company? Yes or no. Do you love this, you know, couch? Yes or no. Do you enjoy sitting on it? Do you love this field? Yes or no. And having to, because again, the confusion is so overwhelming sometimes that I don't even know where it's coming from. And I was trying to find some kind of understanding in that confusion. And I think focusing on the things that I love wasn't just a distraction. It was a way of understanding myself.
You know, I was listening to a podcast describing the different universal laws, and how one of the universal laws is that there's only two energies, fear, which is confusing and it confuses us, and then love energy, right? That is the opposite. Like, there's really only the two. Mm-hmm. And so I think when we stay in love energy, like you were, that pulls us up into an expanded state, and we can then move forward and bring these beautiful things that we can share with others from within and thrive. So I think you've expressed that really eloquently, actually.
That's really cool that you say that. I that kind of sums up everything that I I was going through at the time. It's true. I mean, the fear just kind of stalled you out.
Yeah. And the antidote is finding those little things and love energy. So tell us more about the album and, you know, maybe some more insights that came with it.
I did a lot of, even within the photography, I did a lot of just really trying to explore the idea of, you know, feeling tangible things. We were doing it through the pandemic as well, which made it difficult to kind of find those. That was a big part of it. But you know, it's one of the songs on the album It's called LA Wannabe. And I'm a big fan of Lana Del Rey. And there was also kind of a personal identity crisis too, because I love fashion and I love dressing up, but I don't love crowds. And I don't, I really prefer to be on the West Coast where you have wide open spaces and the water's close by. And I think that song, LA Wannabe, is just a song about, the disappointing parts of my personality, where I could never really be like a Paris Hilton of the world. Not that that should disappoint me, but I wanted to be simpler. I there's parts of me that wishes my mind wouldn't go down these rabbit holes all the time. But it does. I can't help it. I ask a lot of big questions. My counselor always says that. She's like, why? She doesn't say, why do you ask those questions? But she's like, not everybody would ask all those questions in a day. So that kind of stops me from, being, that detached from the deep, dark depths, because I think that's a big part of who I recognize that I have become, is I am actually fascinated by the darkness. I guess I don't so much shy away from it. I know that I need to be, in order to be a, an active member of society and to be a mother that I want to be and the friend that I want to be, I have to be, I have to be moving forward and I have to be, well enough to do that. But at the same time, I am quite fascinated by these questions and by the thoughts that might hold me back. But I guess that's why I'm a songwriter. I love finding the metaphor in that. There's a reason it distracts me. There's a reason it pulls me out of the darkness. It's absolutely fascinating. It's so fun. It's such a thrill. It's such a joy, and it's scary. And it's, my mind is like on a drug when I do, when I'm working on creation. And so anyways, I guess LA Wannabe, that's one of the songs on the album that just kind of works with that, trying to understand that personality dichotomy that I know we all have. None of us are all good or all bad or all healthy or all unhealthy. We've got a million parts to us, and I think it's fascinating to try to understand what those.
I think it's a great title, because I think we're all programmed to think that when we're like someone else who appears to be successful, then we'll be happy, instead of just being who we really are, right? Which leads to that unique version that you can offer to the world. But yeah, I think we all go through times when we just don't feel successful enough, because what's painted in media is impossible to achieve, really.
Well, yeah. And I think the stuff that's painted in media too is never the, the real crux of who that person is. It's, and I think we all start in such a raw way. And then, you get yourself out there, or, you present yourself as a successful person. And that's so much of that. So much of that is marketing. It's, I find it absolutely fascinating. I just came back from a trip to New York, and it was more, I'm always aware of how much marketing can kind of, that's what sells the thing. That's not what the thing is. That's just what sells it. And so I don't think I've ever been so aware of the distance between truth and marketing. I find marketing actually quite fascinating. If you ever listen to Terry O'Reilly, Under the Influence, he's always talking about it. But anyways, that's the second time I've dropped CBC. I obviously listen to local broadcasting company. Yeah, I think it's just not, it's like a girl who's 13 looking at, face of a girl in a magazine and wanting to be that. I mean, it's just, that girl is not the magazine picture. There's such a difference there. So for us to strive for that takes away all of our personality and all of the depth that we are.
Really does. And marketing is multifaceted. Like, it really plays on our unconscious and our wannabes.
Yeah, exactly.
And what were some of the other questions that you've asked with your therapist, some of those deep questions that she said?
Oh, man. Yeah. Which ones have I been asking? Well, I suppose the most recent one has been what's wrong with me? And I think we all ask that. That's not an uncommon question. I ask it so obsessively that I think it, it turns me into, you know, in part, one of the kinds of people who just assumes that I am unliked in a lot of different situations, which, you know, that's rooted in childhood trauma. But yeah, it's an obsessing question. And to the point where I was at one time diagnosed, and going through the album, I had assumed that this was my diagnosis still, with agoraphobia and depression and generalized anxiety disorder and panic disorder. And so I, up until last Friday, I realized that that is not necessarily the case anymore, because I've been able to function a lot better over the past 10 years. But yeah, that's been a big question, is, you know, what does the psychological world, you know, how do they see me? Like, am I a proper member of society yet? Or am I still this person who, you know, because in my real meltdown was, you know, 12, 13 years ago, when I actually had to stop working for 3 months. I couldn't drive. I couldn't hardly leave the house. I couldn't grocery shop on my own. I mean, it was, yeah, those were the real dark days. But now I just have generalized anxiety disorder. So woo-hoo. It's, but the questions that they are asking me are ones that I don't always ask myself. So I thought, like, you talk to a psychiatrist and it's actually quite different. But the funny thing for me is I see people walking about, my husband, friends, my mother, my father — my father's passed away now — a lot of people in my life not asking the questions. And I know that if I was them, I would be saying, you know, what's wrong with me? And couldn't life be a little bit easier if I did this, this, and this? And I think that's a big thing, is I'm desperately trying to make my life easier. But I, you know, I see a lot of people just, and I think the stigma around mental health has still got people, you know, tied up. They just, it's hard for them to move forward because they won't let themselves ask the questions. And it's fear thing, but I think it's also a stigma thing, where people think, like, I'm fully open. I see it. I saw a psychiatrist on Friday. I talk to my counselor as much as I can. I, you know, I'm constantly on top of it because I don't want life to be so hard. Mm-hmm. And I think if, like, anybody is going through addiction or any kind of mental health crisis, it's always going to be hard, but it doesn't need to be this hard, you know? And I think we have a responsibility as people living in 2023 to help people living in 2043. We need to do everything we can to be trying to figure out the answers, and to be sort of saying, like, this is what's going on with me, and maybe it's going on with you too, and maybe there's an easier way. Maybe we can move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. Did it help to connect it to childhood trauma? Did it help you realize that was your little girl self and now you are different from that?
I don't know how to answer that, because it's actually taken me really up until, like, maybe a month ago to really say that I suffered from an abusive childhood. And I don't know. I think it's got to be the path forward. But I mean, I had my counselors and my doctors that I was working with years ago saying, you were in an abusive situation, but it goes right over your head when you're that far gone. I think the reason it's come back is because my siblings are going through it too. And so I think, yes, ultimately, I suppose the answer is yes, but it's doesn't feel like it right now, because you got to revisit it all. You have to keep, you know, going through it.
And it likes to remain hidden. By remaining hidden, it helps us survive, or our unconscious or our conscious mind thinks if we keep it put away and in a box somewhere, then it won't harm us. But by looking at it, it can actually help dissolve it. So it's quite the process.
It's quite the process. And I actually don't know if, I think for me, it's important for me to understand it because of the way my brain works, but I'm not convinced that everybody who in my family needs to revisit it in the way that I do. I don't know if that awareness is always useful. I think some people get on just fine. I think there's a risk in that from keeping it hidden, but I don't know. I'm not convinced that it's always a good idea. I think sometimes looking at these, you know, it's like Tom Petty says, when you're writing a song, it's like you're doing open heart surgery. And sometimes that can be actually quite damaging. So for me, I think it's important for sure, but God, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's not easy.
Right? It's a very brave path, but it does lead to freedom.
For me, I do believe that.
Yeah. Well, from my studies, I've learned that we get triggered even though it's hidden. So mm-hmm. we can get triggered by something that's from our five senses, and it can come from childhood, like say the smell of apple pie that happened at the same time that something difficult happened. And then that smell will trigger you right back into the state as a child, but you don't know why. You don't know why you're feeling like that, you know, anxious and stressed and depressed. And so it doesn't have to be full-blown going back into it, I don't think, either. I think that can be damaging, but just to realize that you're being triggered, I think, is very powerful.
This is just what my psychiatrist was saying on Friday, talking about how, you know, you could get angry because of a shape you saw. We just don't know. You just don't know. Nobody knows. This isn't something that people know yet. Like, how far do we have to go? There's so much, but it's also fascinating. Like you're saying, like, yeah, it could be a sound, it could be a shape, it could be a smell. I think that's just, wow, how fascinating is that? And we just don't know what it was that hurt us in the past.
Yeah. And you were talking about the five senses, how it can pull you out of that feeling or that, you know, depressed state or anxiety. It's how our brain works or how it learns, right? And the unconscious mind learns through the five senses. So, like, imagine if you were a baby and you were learning when an apple was, you would, you know what the color was, what the taste was, what the texture was, all the five senses, and eventually you just know it's an apple.
Yeah, I really love that. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. So that's why we can get triggered just from a smell. I often use the example of if someone was told, you know, really bad news while they were on the phone, yet they were just eating a peach, so the smell of the peach is still there. And then,
oh yeah.
Right. And then years later, they could just that smell of the peach can send them into the same kind of anxiety because the two are attached. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Yeah. I love the questions you're asking. What else can you share from your album? The things that have bubbled up from your inner knowing.
There's a song on there called Painted, and it talks about relationships and how really putting pressure on the next person to, by the next, I mean, whether it's, you know, a relationship with a friend or a lover or whatever, not usually children, to kind of fill you up in a very specific way. We always have these ideas of, you know, what a lover should be to us or what a friend should do for us or needing to hold these people in our lives accountable for us. And I think that is not a healthy way to look at relationships. I think it's a lot of pressure that's why we have multiple people in our lives. We don't have one person if we're lucky. We've got lots of different people. And I think that was, you know, it's called Painted because, you know, painting kind of this design, many different, we have so many different parts of our personalities that we need tended to. And, you know, we've got girlfriends and we've got guy friends and, you know, we've got friends at work and we've got friends I've got friends through music and you know, you're creating constant relationships and friendships. And I think it paints a really beautiful picture of who we are as people when we, you know, you look at the people in your life. But, you know, that was a big part of it was, you know, particularly with my relationship at home, you know, just making sure that I wasn't putting that pressure on my partner. Making sure that, you know, vice versa, and that I was able to, that I'm constantly able to, you know, making sure that you recognize that you don't need to be holding this person accountable to be your own.
We do paint a picture of what we think, you know, the perfect partner would be, what they would look like, how they would act. And then we're constantly disappointed instead of just letting the perfect partner come and be who they are, right?
Well, and we assume then that we're a perfect partner too,
you know? Right?
We're the godsend for them. Oh, well, look at how great I am. Well, I mean, that's the fault of our Hollywood culture. you know, like that's, yeah. you know, you, or fairy tales.
Yeah. Yeah. Dixie painted those pictures when we were really young.
And it's with friendships too. I think we're constantly being let down by our friends, and we forget that we're constantly letting our friends down as well. And I think it's just that sense of grace and gratitude for our relationships. It needs to be a more vocal point. Like the first line of the song Painted is, do you mean all that you say? Will you mean your words still when I'm shaking in my sheets? Assuming that person can be there all the time. And that's just not a reality. I mean, sure, if they're laying there beside you, but what if you're on the road driving? Like, and then at some point you're getting frustrated because you don't, you know, like I've had that before. I get needy and I think that I should have support at all times. And I think there's, you know, hopefully you've got people there for you. And that's, I think support systems are the difference between, you know, me being on the street and me having a home. But to put that pressure on, I think that's where that song came from, trying to release the pressure a little bit and take some accountability from it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was home for a couple of weeks and I woke up at 3 a.m. realizing that all of humanity suffers from separation. And mm-hmm. Like when we're born, we're still connected to the mother's womb and all that is. And then we come into this world and we're separated. And then we're always looking outside ourselves to fulfill when actually it's the opposite. We need to look inside in order to find that the gifts and the beauty. And it's hard to explain, but it's what you're talking about. And then you're not looking to others to make you happy, right? Like it's really powerful when you get it. Yeah.
Relationships go wrong. I think there is a lot of, not that I necessarily think that there's, you get married at 18 and that should be your person for the rest of your life. I think, you know, people come in and out of our lives and people are there for a certain length of time for a reason. But I think that pressure and, you know, that's why I think a lot of relationships just don't last though. Is I think that you look, cause it's something you can see, you know, visually, and look inside is such a harder thing to do. But that's where, like you're saying, I think that's where we can find ourselves a much more at home with relationship with clingy, needy.
Well, we've all felt it, right? And then at some point you either have to, what is it? You either grow up in a way and look inside for such things, or you continue to create the problems.
Yeah.
For me, it happened when I had twins, when my husband could no longer be there for me in the way that he was before. And he even felt more pressure to make money for a family and have them survive and all of that. So they kind of disappear when you need them like a lot. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, that was one of my meltdown periods for sure. It always takes time for you to figure it out. But
yeah, well, that's interesting because when I did have my little meltdown, as you say, when I got pregnant, my partner and I had actually just separated for a little while, and then I got pregnant. So it was like it was this feeling of, I have to do this on my own. No, because we're going to get back together. Am I supposed to be with him or should I not be with him? And there was just a very confusing, like, But that was certainly like a a feeling of, he should be here now, you know, but also, do I want him here, among many other feelings.
Yeah. Really interesting, isn't it? I love you. I love your album. There's so many deep messages there and such a beautiful thing that you've done to share, you know, your own vulnerabilities. And it's something we don't do enough, I feel, today. So I'm just so grateful to have you on. Can you tell us more about where people could find your album, more about you? And we'll provide the links in the show notes for sure.
Yeah. So Rain's Too Loud for TV is on all the streaming services. You can find it there. I did a follow-up documentary and it's called What's the Point? And it's about the making of Rain's Too Loud. And not just about me, but about all the people involved. And that is on YouTube, on my YouTube channel at r.mason. And then Yeah. And since then I've been working on other singles. I released a couple in the summer, one called European Swimsuit, and the other one was called I Live Here Now. I'll be carrying on with some more recording later in the fall. The two releases that I did in the summer are both they're singles, and they're also on all the streaming. So if you just go r.mason, you should be able to find it on. There is another, I think there's somebody else with a similar name. So typing in Rain's Too Loud for TV will help help find that. And yeah, so yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for being you, sharing your story and writing this album. It's just such a beautiful gift. And we'll be sure to put those links in the show notes. Thank you, hon.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you've enjoyed the information in this episode, share it with someone you care about and know will benefit. There is one thing for certain. Meltdowns are inevitable. Let's move into mastery together. In the show notes, you'll find my Linktree, which has links to many of the most popular platforms. You'll also find links to connect to the featured guest, webpage, and social media. Thanks again for being committed to mastery. Change in this world really starts within each of us.